Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
He's live. He's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome, 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 everybody, to a Saturday morning edition of the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio and your local CBS Sports Radio affiliate, Sirius XM Channel 206. And the radio.com application, 855-212-4CBS, the number to jump on in. That's 855-212-4227 is the number to climb on in. And we will appreciate your participation during the next 4 hours of the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio as we take you all the way up until 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific. If you don't want to call, that's okay. You could also interact with me on the good old cesspool of Twitter. All you got to do is follow and tweet me at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Graceffo and Moriel, they're hanging out with us as well on the other side of the glass. And we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. We'll also have some guests join us along the way. Three to be exact, coming up in about 40 minutes. The Basketball Hall of Famer and Rick Barry, he is going to join us. And then at 3:40 Eastern, 12:40 Pacific, Philadelphia Eagles offensive lineman Lane Johnson will stop by. And then later on in the program at 4:40 a.m. Eastern, 1:40 a.m. Pacific, we have to talk some Stanley Cup playoff hockey as the Stanley Cup final does commence after the long layoff for the Bruins, as it will be Monday night in Boston, as it's the St. Louis Blues and the Boston Bruins. And you may have heard by now, the Blues in early January had the worst record in the league, a tremendous job by Chief and Craig Berube, and that team is now 4 wins away from hoisting the Stanley Cup. So we'll do a little Blues and Bruins talk and squeeze in a little ponies as well with Eddie Olczyk from NBC Sports. He'll be on the call, of course, with Doc Emrick and Pierre Maguire for the entire Stanley Cup final. So a whole lot to do and only 4 hours to play. So let's get right into it. And we start off in hour number one with the NBA. And if you listen to the show, I told you all throughout the year, there's really four parts of this NBA season. You break it down into four categories. Number one, who's coming out of the Eastern Conference? Number two, what will the Warriors do? Can anyone find a way to knock the Warriors off their throne? Number three, LeBron and the Lakers. And that storyline. And the number four is, of course, what's going to happen this summer with all the buildup that happens during the regular season and even the postseason, because the summer with free agency and the NBA the last few years has been more important and has been more covered and more talked about than the irrelevant regular season. So that's the way that we have broken down the NBA all throughout the year. So when we start the show right now, we'll do that still. Because when we look at the Eastern Conference, we know it's down to two teams. No more Celtics, no more Sixers, as that's been a big topic of conversation out of the four teams who would get to the NBA Finals. And you have a Eastern Conference final of the Bucks and the Raptors. And through two games, Milwaukee, they took the 2-0 lead at their home court. And I don't want to say that the series was over, even though I did feel extremely confident that the Bucks were going to punch their ticket to the NBA Finals after going up 2-0. And I picked them in six before the series did commence. And you looked at it, you said, well, you know what the saying is. A series isn't over when you're down until you lose one on your home court. And you have to give major props to Toronto because they win game three, which was the double overtime affair. And then they blow out the Bucks in game four, and it's two games apiece. So you're going into this game five the other night, and Milwaukee, for a large chunk of the game, was the better team. You look at the final numbers, Milwaukee shot better from the field. Milwaukee had more rebounds, and Milwaukee also had more assists. And you look at some of these numbers and you say, well, Milwaukee was up by double digits multiple times throughout the game, and you see the final score, it's Toronto 105 to Milwaukee 99. So this was a game that Milwaukee should have won, and they didn't. And you got to give credit to Toronto because anytime they started to look like, this isn't their night, they found a way to scratch and claw and get back into the basketball game. And then the final few minutes of the game, they were up. And Lopez hit that three, tied up. You're thinking, okay, here comes Milwaukee. And Toronto still found a way. And the reason why Toronto is now up and they won that game five, it's a few reasons. Number one, the defense on Giannis Antetokounmpo. And they're exposing Giannis's lack of his jump shot. And you also had the three-point shot because three-pointers were 18 for the Raptors to 10 to Milwaukee. And, hey, this is a Raptors team that we've been through the gauntlet with them, and I've had a lot of fun at their expense because I didn't believe in Toronto the last few years. This year, you can flip a coin. I like Milwaukee the best out of all the teams in the Eastern Conference, and it's extremely impressive what they've done and the way they've done it. Is after going down 2-0, they look confident. Where Milwaukee, who hasn't lost three games in a row in this entire season up until now, they were not ready for the big stage. And we'll see if they're going to be able to put that behind them and find a way to go win game six in Toronto. Because if you can't win game six in Toronto, your season's over and Toronto's going to the finals. And Kawhi Leonard's done a complete 180 from a year ago. We all know how great of a player he is, but he was obnoxious last year. Wouldn't say anything. I know he doesn't say much this year as well, but he forced his way out of San Antonio. His image did take a hit last year, but now it's back in the good graces of the NBA fan because this man is spectacular. We all know how great of a basketball player he is going back to when he was a finals MVP. It's a tremendous story, and here we are once again in another series where he's averaging 30-plus points. And the big key is, can you get another player? Can you get another player in this series for both teams to really step up and shine? And the player that did it in games four and five was Van Vliet. And you want to look at the numbers going in for Van Vliet. He had 1-3 against the Sixers. He had 2 threes entering game four of this series against the Bucks. And he explodes in the last two games for 10 three-pointers and a total of 34 points. And his most impressive performance was in game five where he had 7 three-pointers. Seven. So that's the difference. Kawhi's showing up. And Van Vliet was superb coming off the bench. Because you look at Milwaukee's number. Giannis got 24. Lopez got 16. Bledsoe got 20. Brogdon got 8. But then off the bench, it was only Hill with 12 and Connaughton with 3. That's not good enough. So if Milwaukee's going to want to win this game 6, they're going to have to be better mentally, and they're going to have to hit the three-point ball. And if they don't hit the three-point ball, turn out the lights, the party's over, and Toronto will be going to the finals. And when that was 2-0, nobody thought that Toronto would have the possibility or even have it in them to go win four in a row. And here we are with it being a possible outcome. And Toronto's on the home court right now, so they should feel great. So we'll see how that series does play out. And then we get to the Western Conference, and it's Golden State, Golden State, Golden State. They're already in the NBA Finals. And with Golden State, I know people got into this conversation Are the Warriors better without Kevin Durant? That's nonsense. And I've been saying this all throughout the playoffs. I've never wavered on Golden State. I know it's not this hot take or this breaking news. Until someone beats Golden State, I don't care how good you think someone is in the East. I don't care if they have Kevin Durant or they don't, and they're not going to have him for the start of the finals. They expect to get KD and Boogie, though, back at some point during the finals. They're hopeful of that. I don't care, though, because people forget how good this team was in the Rockets series. When people were questioning the Warriors when they lost Kevin Durant, people forgot how good they were before Kevin Durant. This is a team that had 73 wins one year. This is a team that won a championship. So with Kevin Durant, they're unbeatable. Without Kevin Durant, they're a really great basketball team that I would still pick to win it all. And you see the way that they're doing it. It's so impressive. They were down 17, 18, and 17 in games 2 through 4 against the Trailblazers. And I don't care if it was at Oracle or if it was on the road in Portland. You knew they were coming back. You knew they were going to get the job done. And they did each and every time. And people could say they're tired of the Warriors. They're boring. It was jaw-dropping every time in those comebacks. And there was no Kevin Durant. So it made it even more impressive because they're doing it without one of the better players in basketball. Now, it helps when Steph Curry gives you 2 games with 36 and 2 games with 37 in the 4-game sweep. It helps when Draymond Green is actually becoming a likable player and you see him with a triple-double, and Klay Thompson is always clutch. And then, oh yeah, by the way, their bench is stepping up and producing. And sometimes these guys end up starting too with Looney and McKinney and Bell and Cook and Livingston. This is a fun, likable group. And they're going to win the finals again. But I want to watch them, and I want to keep on watching them. And the reason why I want to keep on watching them is because they could get down 18 points in the final, and I don't think it's going to matter. And think about this. In game 4, they were down 17. They could have easily said, you know what? Going home, we'll get them in game 5. No, they came back and won. So it was absolutely tremendous to see. It really was. And then we'll get into the third and fourth part of the NBA season, as I like to document it when we talk about the East, the West, and then what is LeBron doing and then what's going to happen in the offseason. With the Lakers, it was another messy week for them. So this whole Magic Johnson thing came back up in the news because he did an interview on First Take, actually the day of, the morning of, when they introduced Frank Vogel as the head coach. And let me be clear, I said this before. I don't blame Magic Johnson for leaving. He should have never been hired, though, to be the president. When you hear that Jeannie Buss was aware, oh yeah, he's going to stick with the other businesses, you need someone that's fully committed. And the reason why he left, a few things, he wasn't having fun. And if he wasn't having fun, if I'm Magic Johnson, with all I've accomplished, I would leave as well. He didn't enjoy the backstabbing, as he believed he was getting stabbed in the back by Rob Pelinka. And he wanted to fire Luke Walton. One day it was, let me think about it. Next day it was, okay, you could do it. Then the third day, not too many people are getting into the ears of one Jeannie Buss. So it's a dysfunctional mess that Magic Johnson does paint. However, here's the weird part of it. You hear Rob Pelinka respond later that day that him and Magic Johnson talked multiple times after he resigned. And it was buddy-buddy, jovial conversation. So Magic felt like he was backstabbed, and then he played like he was a friend with Pelinka to then stab him in the back as well to get revenge. And also Jeannie Buss, who Magic Johnson said he loves like a sister, asked him if anything was wrong and why did he resign and all that. And every time he said, hey, nothing's wrong, it's just I wasn't having fun, and that was it, basically. And you wait until the day when Frank Vogel is getting announced to make this big stink. So it doesn't look good for Magic Johnson. It doesn't look good for Jeannie Buss. And it doesn't look good for Rob Pelinka. No one looks good in this situation. And it actually makes LeBron, who did not have a good year this year, it actually makes him look like a sympathetic figure. It does. And now you're wondering, well, who's going to want to join the Lakers? So LeBron's going to have to do this recruiting pitch. And you have Brian Windhorst already saying that LeBron has talked to Jimmy Butler and Kemba Walker. There's tons of speculation once again about Anthony Davis. and also Kyrie Irving. So even though everyone says, oh, the NBA playoffs are boring, oh, it's going to be the Warriors again, there's actually been some excitement in all four levels that we break down the NBA season. Because the Eastern Conference Final has been exciting. Even though the Western Conference Final was a sweep, the Warriors were jaw-dropping, coming back from 17, 18, and 17. The Lakers are a dysfunctional mess. How will they rise up? And what's going to happen this summer in free agency? Where's Kevin Durant going? What's going to happen with Kemba Walker? What's going to happen with Kyrie? There's so much craziness going on in the NBA, and it's a drama machine. It's really as if the Kardashians run the NBA, and they're making a reality TV show, because some of this stuff you really can't make up. So if you want to jump on at 855-212-4CBS, that's CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line. It's brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. If you want to talk about the Eastern Conference Finals, we could do that. If you want to talk about the dominance of the Warriors or some of the Durant storylines, we could do that as well. And if you want to touch on the Lakers, we could do that as well. It's a Zach Gelb show right here on CBS Sports Radio.
He's back. Here's Zach Gelb. He's live. He's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
And we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Lane Johnson from the Philadelphia Eagles is going to join us coming up in 35 minutes on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I was mentioning it real quickly before we took the break about what Richard Jefferson said in giving an argument on why Kevin Durant would stay. And it was talking about the opportunity to win four championships in a row. And, you know, there's only been one team to win four in a row, and that was the Celtics, who ended up winning eight in a row. But the big point by Jefferson was that when you look at the argument of, like, who's the best player, and he talks about how Kobe was chasing Michael and LeBron was chasing Kobe and Michael. Now you got Durant trying to chase everybody else and, you know, try to be the best player on the planet. In those types of arguments, I thought it was an interesting point by Richard Jefferson, who said, everything is about the argument when you talk about the legacy talk. Jefferson said, if he can win four in a row, that's something Michael didn't do. That's something Magic didn't do. Something Kobe didn't do and Bron didn't do. Then he puts himself in that position. I feel like Kevin Durant in the driver's seat to do something that hasn't been done by anybody. So that could you could possibly compare him to, say, that's why I would lean towards him saying. So, you know, he brings up that point. If you stay for another year and you win a championship this year, you have three in a row, you could go get four in a row, and it doesn't necessarily have him usurp some of the other players that are considered the best ever, the GOAT, or whatever. It is an argument that you could say, oh, well, Michael didn't win four in a row. Oh, Magic didn't win four in a row. LeBron didn't win four in a row. Kobe didn't win four in a row. And so on and so on. Now, there's other ways around the argument. So even though Durant wouldn't be the first player to win four in a row, when you compare him to some of the other all-time greats that are right at the top of that conversation, it does give him an edge up on some of those names. So I just thought that was interesting. All right, Rick and Ken, I'll get to you in just a second, so hang tight, and I do appreciate your patience. I have to get to two storylines that I'm absolutely sick and tired of. So let me start the first one with Chris Broussard and Kevin Durant. So they're having a little social media beef, and the entire start of this was Chris Broussard was on FS1, and he was making the point, if the Warriors win a title without Kevin Durant, he asked the question, does that diminish the two rings that he won with the Warriors? And he said, hey, Kevin Durant's worst nightmare is coming true. If they win without him, everyone's going to bring this back up and they'll put an asterisk, on his two championships and all that nonsense. So Durant, who can never sit out any type of social media interaction, decides to jump on it and says, I see a little exaggeration there, buddy. My worst nightmare, you sure that is the worst that I can get? So Durant takes it very literal. I'm sure there's a lot more worse things that go on in Kevin Durant's life. But Broussard was making the point for the show. So that's that. Now, then you have Broussard going on Undisputed on FS1 and their 9,000 shows that they have. And he started talking about how him and KD have a love-hate relationship. And he said they've texted for 2-3 hours straight about life, basketball, media, faith. And KD has attacked him or gone at him a lot harder privately. We make a living critiquing athletes. It would be hypocritical of us not to be able to take it. That's what Broussard said. So KD sees that and he says, cap, 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 cap. You don't have my number, man. And then this made Chris Broussard take to social media when he was driving or he was pulled off the side of the road. He's in his car. And he goes, hey, if you want to make a big deal and a big fuss and put up a big stink about that I don't have your number and I said it was texting when we direct message and all that stuff, which I do believe Broussard, then you know what it is, what it is. Here's where, though, I think Broussard just got so nauseating. Muriel, let's play some of the audio towards the end of Broussard in his car.
Finally, after all of this, I will continue to love, respect, and pray for Kevin Durant and objectively analyze him as a basketball player.
Now, I'm just sorry. You could love the guy. You want to pray for him. Do whatever you want. He's taking this way too seriously. It was a beef on social media about something so trivial and so stupid. And I like Chris Broussard. We had him on the show before. But you go a little bit over the top. You know, I'll still love him. I'll still root for him. I'll pray for him. What are you throwing him in your prayers for? And I get, hey, Chris and Kennedy, they could be very religious, but what are you throwing him in your prayers for? It's not like something tragic happened. You guys got in a petulant media beef. It was stupid. So I think Broussard got a little bit too serious on it. Now, the other one is Drake. We're having a really good series right now between the Bucks and the Raptors, where the Bucks were up 2-0. Toronto gets 2 in Toronto. And then they go win game 5 in a game the Bucks could have won. And the Bucks choked. And Toronto was a team that did not play their best brand of basketball. When the matter did, when the moment did shine bright, they showed up and delivered and they won the game. And now they could go close things out tonight. So everyone's making a big deal about Drake and his antics on the sidelines. And hey, I think it's fun. Do I need to see a camera on Drake 24-7? No. Maybe it will remind some people of Spike Lee and Reggie Miller. I know a lot of people were annoyed with Drake giving a back rub to Nick Nurse during a game. He's a team ambassador, whatever his title is. I don't think it's that big of a deal. But the problem that I have with it is we're putting too much attention on Drake and no one's talking about the Bucks and the Raptors and the great series that we have unfolding. How Toronto looked dead and they find a way to take a big-time 3-2 lead. So they had a watch party the other night, and right away, the cheesy TV interviews, they have to run up to Drake and go, Drake, 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 tell us everything you want to talk about since now the Raptors are one win away from going to the finals. And here's what Drake had to say as he was very pumped up after the big one.
Listen, we have the best player. We have the best fans in the whole NBA, in the whole world. Look around you. Look at this. We created this. This didn't exist before we were here. Look around at the square. I promise you right now, we did this. Doesn't matter what anybody says. They can say it's disrespectful. They can say it's this and that. And that. Everybody's within the rules. Everybody's doing their thing. All we are is proud and passionate. We are like a college sports team. The Toronto Raptors are a college sports team, I promise you. I love Toronto. I love this team. And we're going to the
NBA. What do you have to say to Bucks fans?
That's my favorite part, the TV report at the end. What do you got to say to Bucks fans? As if that's going to be some big-time breaking news what Drake has to say. It would be, but, like, who cares? And what is he talking about? We created this. You know, this didn't exist. What didn't exist? A rally before a game? Or during a game and after, like, I don't get it. So, it's all in good fun. I guess it's another entertaining storyline for the NBA. But can we talk about the actual game between the Bucks and the Raptors like we did earlier? Instead of all you hear about Bucks and Raptors, Drake this, Drake that, Drake this, Drake that. Like, enough already. And the Broussard KD thing, I know that series has been long over since it was a sweep. No one was harmed. But now we gotta love and pray for Kevin Durant because his feelings got a little bit hurt. Over, I guess, semantics. Oh, it was a text. It was a DM. Absolutely ridiculous. All right, let's go to Rick in Baltimore next up on the Zach Gelb Show. Rick, go ahead.
Yeah, great show, Zach. Super show. You just interviewed a great player. Great, great player. I was at, I wasn't at the games, the Bullets. I was an old Bullets fan, and they swept the Bullets.
Yeah.
Who were heavily favored. They came back in every game. The only thing I didn't like about Rick was he's screaming at the refs every call. You know, but what a player. Refined. Just super. I want to touch on the Eastern Conference first, and then we'll go to the Golden State thing. I talked to you about this finals about a week or so ago, and I said seven, and I was kind of flip-flopping, but I think Toronto definitely tonight, they play their game. Kawhi Leonard reminds me of Cindy Moncrief. They can win. They can win tonight, you know?
Well, hey, if this is your opportunity, this is where you could shut everybody up, anyone that's ever doubted you, and you could go win four in a row and win it on your home court and celebrate in front of your home fans. Now, if you lose this one, the momentum's going to shift back to Milwaukee because I don't think Milwaukee is going to lose two games on their home court. And I thought it was very interesting. Barkley, after the game, when I was watching him on TNT, he said, hey, this is basically Toronto's game seven. Now, I'm not saying they can't win it and go win a game seven. I wouldn't put anything past Kawhi. I thought that was an interesting take, though, by Barkley saying game six is actually game seven because he thinks they would have no shot winning a game seven in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I agree with you. And as far as Golden State, that's self-explanatory. We talked, you and I talked about this. I enjoy them, watching them thoroughly. I kind of hope Kevin Durant stays. If he stays, you know, what the hell. They're a great team. They could ride off in the sunset and win so many championships and just eclipse history, brother. They're a phenomenal team. I look forward. This is great basketball, Zach. It's just great basketball.
It is great basketball, Rick, and I do appreciate the phone call. Thank you so much. And they're a fun team to watch. The thing is, though, I would have no problem if KD leaves because even though I still think the Warriors are by far the best team in the league, it shifts the thought process, though, of, okay, this team's unbeatable to then at least make people think they're vulnerable. And when you think they're vulnerable, look what they do. Draymond steps up his game. Steph gets on a hot streak. And Clay is what Clay always does, underappreciated and, you know, a great player. So if he leaves, Durant makes the West stronger if he leaves or, you know, creates a little bit more, parity or you could just say more diversity in the Western Conference. Or if he goes to the East, hey, that's another big-time superstar that's going to the East in the last few years. So I wouldn't mind him leaving because this Warriors team is still damn good, as we know. But if I was him, it's like, why would you leave? And the only thing that you would leave is because you're still personally annoyed that people still give you flack for joining an already all-time great team to get your rings. And if you see with the social media interaction, he can deny it all he wants, but it does come off as sensitive, even though he's just trying to give his opinion, which he has every right to. But when you're Kevin Durant and you respond to people like 100 followers, not just Broussard, but other people like 100 followers, yeah, it gets a little ridiculous. You know, sometimes I'm not comparing my social media presence to Kevin Durant, but sometimes people here will say, well, why are you responding to these people with like 30 followers that have an egg face that are trying to troll you? Because sometimes you get caught up in the moment and we're all human. And it could really annoy you and bug you when people say things to you that you don't like. Let's go to Ken in Toronto. Ken, go ahead.
How you doing, Zach? Great show. I just wanted to say, you know, it's been a long time since we've seen a three-peat. I don't know why everyone's getting ahead of themselves and saying anything about Durant winning four in a row. But, you know, I think he's gone this year. I don't really care. To be honest with you, I just really want to talk about Kawhi. I think he's amazing. I mean, Masai Ujiri is probably accomplished the best trade in NBA history. He brought Kawhi here. I think if he played 22 games, I don't know where Toronto would be, but they have the second most wins in the league, and I think if they had 22 games from Kawhi, I think for sure, guaranteed, they would be the number one team in the league.
Yeah, but you don't know what kind of spot they would be in right now if he played all those games. Can you see a little bit how he's banged up and he's getting a little bit tired? Played a whole lot better down the stretch, obviously, in game number 5. Hey, that was a tremendous trade by Masai Ujiri. There's no doubt about it. Changed the culture, and we'll see if Kawhi Leonard does come back. But this Raptors team, it's a tremendous story, and you know it now. It's about finishing, and it's about getting the job done. And we'll see if they could do that. Because when they had DeRozan on that team with Lowry, and I know Lowry's still there, they would make all this noise in the regular season. They would fall flat in their face in the postseason. Now they're up 3-2. They've come back from down 2-0. You get a tremendous finisher, a great two-way player. Now can you seal the deal, or are you going to let Milwaukee go back to their home court in a game 7? And then from there, there would be a lot of people changing their opinion on the Raptors. So I can't wait to see how this unfolds coming up later tonight. However, I do know one thing. If the Raptors do win the first interview, it's not going to be Kawhi. Drake, what do you have to say, Drake? What do you got to say, Drake? That's what it's going to be.
He's back. Here's Zach Gelb. CBS.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Last Drake reference that I'm going to make during our Saturday morning get-together. That clip we played for you earlier, if they don't get to the finals, that's going to be on Old Takes Exposed. I bet you the guy that runs Old Take Exposed already has it in the drafts. Has to have it in the draft section on Twitter. And I think a lot of people will be rooting for Milwaukee to make the comeback just so they could troll Drake on social media. Anyway, though, I was listening to the DP show, Dan Patrick, earlier this week. Chris Long, as we know, did retire. He was a guest with Dan. And Chris Long has been very vocal since retiring about his time in the NFL where he smoked marijuana. And I actually had a few tweets back and forth with Chris this past week. I was at a tremendous pizza place called Shack-a-Maxon Pizza in Philadelphia. And usually, I don't think Philadelphia has good pizza because I'm from New York. And I've lived there for 7 years, and I haven't had a slice that's on par with New York pizza until I went to this place, Shack-a-Maxon. So I tweeted Chris Long, hey, if you ever get really, 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 really hungry for whatever extracurricular activities you're partaking in, maybe you want to go check out this pizza place in Philadelphia, where then Chris Long sent back one of the bigger players in the Little League World Series doing the eyebrow raise. So he thought the pizza looked very good. Damn. It was a tremendous slice. You had a pepperoni on one. And then the other one, it was like a pea basil with like an olive vodka sauce. It was a specialty pie. It was absolutely delicious. And it had a very nice tomato pie as well. And it wouldn't surprise me if Portnoy winds up there and starts doing his one bite everyone knows the rules pizza review there. So anyway, though, when Chris Long was on with Dan Patrick, he talked about how he enjoyed his fair share of marijuana. He talked about how easy it is to get around the marijuana testing and the drug testing of the National Football League for the quote-unquote street drugs, because they only test you once a year for that, and the players basically know when it's coming, so he's got to sober up and put down the joints for a little bit. And he talked about how he believes the league should allow players to use and enjoy marijuana, and he points out how it's less harmful than alcohol and tobacco. And by the way, NFL teams and the NFL, they do business with products that obviously promote the sale of alcohol and tobacco. And he even said, hey, you know, if you have a player that goes out and drinks, well, if he's just smoking pot, most of the time he's not going to get off the couch because he's going to be like eating a bag of potato chips and watching the Game of Thrones. So, hey, we know the science behind it with the chronic pain and the stress. The interesting part, though, even now is, so it's illegal in some states, as we know. The NFL doesn't let you smoke marijuana, even though their testing policy is very lenient when it comes to it. It's odd, though, in the states that they do say it's legal, how that player technically still can't smoke because it's the NFL rule. I think we should be more open-minded to it, and I don't have a problem if players want to smoke marijuana during the week. Like, I don't want to have them smoke it on game day. I'm sure there's been many players in the past that have smoked marijuana on game day, even worse, if you read up on some stuff. But with that being said, it comes down to, if this is a way that players believe could help them heal quicker or just feel better with all the stress mentally and physically that players go through, if they want to go to marijuana, I'm fine with that. And, hey, this is Chris Long, guy won 2 Super Bowls, had a successful career, and he said he used it during his career. And I'm sure, as we all know, there's a lot of players in the National Football League that use marijuana as well. So I thought it was interesting. We'll ask Lane Johnson about it in just a second when he joins us. We'll also talk about some of the charity work he's doing and some of the great things he's doing for Kilgore College and a little bit about his career. So Lane Johnson's going to join us next.
He's back. Here's Zach Gelb. He's live. He's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio, and we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Coming up in 35 minutes, the great Eddie Olczyk will join us. We will talk about the Preakness. We'll talk about the Kentucky Derby, as we had in the Kentucky Derby a great controversy and the horse that was directly impacted from Maximum Security's interference was War of Will. And then War of Will had the great redemption story at the 2019 Preakness. And I know Graceffa wasn't here last week when we were recapping the Preakness, but we finally got one of the great show questions from my show, DA's show, but we have to give the original credit to Paul Nanos, who started the topic of, does the horse know it's in the race? And we found out very quickly that the horse did now know, after all these years of speculation. In the Preakness, we found out very quickly that, yes, the horse does know that it's in a race, because Bodie Express said to the jockey, get off my back, I'm going to run the race without you. And now, Graceffa, I don't know if you know this, I don't know if you were listening last week, I did some investigation, and when I was investigating, the jockey of Bodie Express before the race said he didn't think the horse could win wire to wire, and they were going to eventually make their charge and their push later on in the race. So the horse maybe heard that and maybe was a little Kevin Durant sensitive, and instead of creating a burner account, said, I'm going to take powers into my own hands, or whatever you want to say for a horse, and I'm just going to literally take the jockey, not hurt him, but fling him off my back, and I'm going to run the race without him. It didn't work for Bodie Express, but it was very entertaining.
You did a segment on this? How long did you do this?
Oh, a while. We did 2 segments on it.
This is 2 segments too long.
Whoa. Now you're a program director? Now yes. Graceffa's... He goes from the overnight board op slash producer sometimes to now the program director.
See, what language did the horse tell you that he knew he was throwing the jockey off his back?
You know, I know the horse very well. Okay.
Okay.
I know him very well.
All right, let's get out of this one. Let's abandon ship.
I know how to make Graceffa feel very uncomfortable very quickly. By the way, before we get into the Steelers, I was thinking about this. Because I know how much you can't stand Ben Roethlisberger. And I know how much that you are the biggest hater of the Cleveland Browns. Who annoys you more, Big Ben or Baker Mayfield?
I really think it's a tie. Maybe Roethlisberger, only because Roethlisberger's beaten me in games that actually matter.
Yeah, and that divisional round playoff game and then the AFC title game.
Yeah.
Where in the AFC title game, that defense of yours didn't show up in the first half.
Well, yeah. I don't like to play the first half of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I just choose not to remember it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But then does it make it any better that you remember the second half? You still lost.
Eh.
Your logic is so interesting.
Doesn't matter, really.
If Graceffa was the program director, we never talk about any negative Jets moments.
That's
so therefore,
true.
We never talk about the Jets.
That's right. Well, everything was very positive this week, I think.
But seriously, who do you... Oh, yeah, with the Jets, I'll say this. I thought Adam Gase handled that circus as well as he could. And I'm not expecting him to say, oh, yeah, I wanted to get Mike Maccagnan fired because I didn't think he knew anything he was doing. I'm not expecting him to say that. He handled it very classy and professionally. Behind the scenes, though, am I supposed to buy that Adam Gase stood there and said, oh, Christopher Johnson, make your own decision? No, I think there was a conversation, even though he said he didn't have any factor into that decision to get rid of Mike Maccagnan. Would it surprise me if Christopher Johnson said, hey, how's it going a few months in? And, or, you know, how's it going? And he maybe said, oh, well, we had this disagreement with Mike. We had this disagreement. But you know what? It looks like we're on the right path. We had a good draft. Like, maybe it was something like that. Or do you think that he just went right to Christopher Johnson and said, yeah, this relationship and marriage is not working out?
I think the moment he realized that Mike Maccagnan was a very soft kind of personality, he went for the jugular.
Yeah, he just waited and was in the woods, and then eventually he pounced.
And to be fair, I've told you this a million times, I'm glad he's gone.
Yeah, but you flip-flop on this. You vacillated. Because right when this story started to brew right before the draft, and
well, I didn't
Mike
believe
Lombardi
it.
Got the story right, you,
no one around here believed it.
Yeah, sure, no one did. I didn't believe it either. But the thing is, you said they can't fire him right now because of the positive momentum they were building. And then so quickly, just like you misremember the first half of that AFC Championship game, you misremember what you say. You're like Roger Clemens.
I really don't remember saying they couldn't fire him.
No, you said they should not fire him.
Okay, should not.
And then the next week you come in, or a few
not
weeks
they
later.
Couldn't. They did.
And it's kumbaya, they made the right decision. So you're
yeah,
all
I mean,
over the
but
place.
To be fair, I wanted him out in September. I wanted him out 6 months ago.
Yeah, and that's when they should have made the move, not now.
Yeah, but now it's that's the past. It's over with. We're moving on. It's a week later.
But the problem still with that is you're going to bring in someone that's an Adam Gase guy, and it could be Joe Douglas.
Right, but I don't expect the GM to just, you know, defer to Adam Gase on everything.
No, but Gase, if he brings in someone he respects, maybe it makes the situation easier. However, the only reason that guy is being brought in is because he's Adam Gase's guy. So Gase does
what
have
does
all the
matter
control.
As long as the two guys are on the same page, what does it matter?
Well, do you always want someone to be on the same page?
But again, I just told you, the GM and the coach are going to not they're not always going to defer to one another. Just say, "Oh, Adam, you're great. You're right. Everything you say is right. I'm wrong."
See, here's
I'm
going to
sit in the corner
wrong.
And I'm just agree with everything you say. That's not going to happen.
They should have made this move at the end of last season, because now.
Right.
You're trying to catch up from all the mistakes that happened in the past, and now you're spending this year getting rid of some of those players or evaluating the players you were going to get rid of.
Whenever you get a patent for a time machine, let me know.
Yeah,
and
but
I'll be
yeah,
sure to
Yeah, but
alert
if you made
Johnson.
This decision at the end of the year and brought in a new GM, you could have already got rid of a ton of these players instead of still having them on your roster.
Again, who are the ton of the players that you were getting rid of, though? Darren Lee?
That was why he couldn't wait quick enough to
get
rid of
Darren
him.
Lee should be off the team. He had no he has no role in the team.
Fair
and
enough.
He was a bust. Any person who had just gotten suspended 4 games.
I'm just saying, I've seen this situation unfold before. Now, it worked for the Eagles. They won a Super Bowl.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, but there was a time.
Would you
where
say
it's
worked for the Kansas City Chiefs as well?
Well, hold on. But there was a time where Howie Roseman was just sitting there and saying, oh, Chip guy, goodbye. Chip guy, goodbye. Chip guy, goodbye. And it took a full year for them to get going. Now, they won quicker than anyone could have expected and quicker than they've expected. It worked, though. Will it work with the Jets? Well, here's
who's
the positives.
To say,
here's the positives say. With the Jets. They have a quarterback. They have a defensive lineman. And they have a safety.
And this coach is a lot brighter than the bulb that was just left here.
Yeah, that's not saying much, though.
To be fair, this coach has done a lot with very little in the past. Can we agree?
He got to the playoffs 1 year in Miami.
And Tannehill, when did Tannehill ever play consistently?
No,
ever?
Not a lot.
Okay.
Here's the thing, though.
Did he draft Tannehill?
No.
Did he ever work with Tannehill when Tannehill was 22, 23?
No.
No.
However, though, with Adam Gase, you know how this works. In New York, You don't have a long time to
make
a great
impression.
Sure, now
he's got a bullseye on his back. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. So that's this they got to at least win 8 games this year.
8's a little much.
So you're just going to say 7-9?
Sure. Okay. The roster is still very bare. There is still the cornerback depth on this team, there is none. The offensive line depth on this team, there is none.
Here's what they need to do this year. This is what you need to have at the end of this year. 2 things. 1, you need to think this team's moving in the right direction. But most importantly, you need that quarterback to take the next step.
And I am very confident.
Because if that quarterback takes the next step and you feel like you have a competent coach and general manager in place, then next year you'll have playoff expectations.
And then no one will remember this had happened a year ago.
That's what Adam Gase said in the press conference. That was the thing he said that was the most dead on. At the end of the day, fans are only going to care if we win or lose.
Right.
And he's
so,
right.
And so is everyone concerned with the bottom line, i.e. everyone in the Jets organization.
The problem, though, is you don't get the benefit of the doubt when you're the Jets because it's expected that you're going to mess this up. That's why fans right now have a negative feeling towards this. Because they just started to look like, hey, we're moving in the right direction. The Giants are laughing stock, but now we're back to being laughing
stock. But again,
stock.
Did the Eagles get the benefit of the doubt at the time?
No. If you remember, everyone was critical in Philadelphia. Why bring Howie Roseman back and Doug Peterson? Mike Lombardi said he's the most unqualified coach in the history of the league.
When the Chiefs fired John Dorsey right after their draft, after he was allegedly...
Different though, Andy was there.
I gotcha.
Andy's more credibility.
Let me just give you the example. Mm-hmm. When the Chiefs fired John Dorsey right after their draft, because allegedly he was leaking information that the Chiefs wanted to trade up for Patrick Mahomes and trying to tell anyone who would listen, did the Chiefs get the benefit of the doubt when they fired John Dorsey?
Different though, once again. Yes, they did because of Andy Reid.
Okay. All right, that's fair.
They got the benefit of the doubt because of Andy Reid.
But to be fair, it looks bad when anyone is firing their GM in May.
Yeah. No, you're right. So that's the justification of James Graceffa.
And I hate Roethlisberger and Baker Mayfield equally.
And if you had to pick one, it's Roethlisberger?
Probably, but it's close.
Who do you think, I'm not even going to go there. I was going to say, who do you think dislikes Mayfield more, Coward or you? But I think Coward actually enjoys Mayfield.
No, Coward loves it because he keeps bringing up his name. Up Mayfield like a toy, and Mayfield just speaks whenever he says. Mm-hmm. Whenever he gets him on, he just winds him up, and Mayfield just goes.
My dream is people in Cleveland start tweeting Mayfield. This clown Graceffa keeps on, busting your chops and, you know, saying you're not that good, and Big 12 quarterbacks never be great, and then Mayfield starts tweeting
I really feel like... anybody could just wind up Mayfield and he would go. Just anyone could say something to Mayfield and he would clap back.
Yeah, I don't know how the Browns will be this year. I think they're going to be a playoff team.
Mayfield's going to be the MVP. He's going to throw for 50 touchdowns.
No, I'm not going to go that far. I like Baker Mayfield,
but
though.
But he's great. Everybody loves Mayfield.
Now, on the other side, we'll talk about Big Ben. And we got to get into the Steelers. We'll do the Steelers the time that they deserve. We got to talk about Juju, what he said this past week. And then also Big Ben making an apology, but AB doesn't want to hear it. We'll talk about that when we come back. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio.
Now back to the Zach Gelb Show. Give us a call right now, 855-212-4CBS.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. It's a damn shame that the Steelers and the Raiders don't play each other this year. Even though we sometimes poke fun, some people will poke fun at Thursday night football games, that would be like a perfect November Thursday night football game. Steelers and Raiders. Would love to see it. And you'd have a lot of drama with the lead up and the storylines. AB missed the big chest, forces his way out. Will Ben and AB shake hands before the game? And you would have AB playing with a lot of passion in that football game. If he's still happy in November in Oakland, if the team's not winning and let's say Derek Carr is not returning to the form that the Raiders hope he does return to. So the start of OTAs was this past week. And there was an interview that Big Ben did with KDKA, which is a news station in Pittsburgh. And he said he genuinely feels bad for how the situation unfolded with this fraying relationship with the superstar wide receiver leading to Brown's trade to the Raiders. The full quote was from Big Ben. I took some heat, and deservedly so, for some of the comments on that show, which the show was the radio show on 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh. where he was critical of the route that Antonio Brown did run on an interception, and especially towards him, Roethlisberger said, "I genuinely feel bad about that, and I'm sorry. Did I go too far after the Denver game? Probably. That's the thing about media and social media. As soon as you say sorry, it only goes so far. You can't take it back, and I wish I could, because if that's what ruined our friendship and the relationship, I'm genuinely sorry about that." So he is being sincere. However, when he goes, "Did I go too far after the Denver game? Probably." No, it's definitely. You make those comments on a radio show. You throw your star wide receiver under the bus when it was because of your stupid mistake. It's not probably. It's definitely. And the thing is, he blames it on social media and the media. No, you said something. Antonio Brown thought you were his guy, even played it right in the moment, Antonio Brown. And then he was never able to get over that. Now, Antonio Brown made himself look crazy as well in this whole process, because Antonio Brown Instagram lives everything, and he's at the gym working out on the elliptical and saying, "Call me Mr. Big Chess," and AB's got to outcompete AB, and he sounds crazy. And as we said from the start, Ben Roethlisberger doesn't look good here. The Rooney family doesn't look good here. Mike Tomlin doesn't look good here. And Antonio Brown doesn't look good here. It's not just one person. And where there may be some other factors into AB wanting out, like getting the new contract, yeah, that could be a factor. Except AB, even with all of his success and how he's on the path to be a Hall of Famer, he is someone that clearly has an ego. He is someone that's clearly a diva. And when you have the star quarterback say something controversial about him and he plays it right, yeah, he can play it right publicly, but down deep, that's still going to annoy him. And he's going to say, "Oh, I thought I was Ben's guy, and now I'm no longer Ben's guy." And then with the way that his brain is wired, he's going to start questioning everything. And you heard it from Antonio Brown. "Oh, how many times did I go over to his house? How many times did the Rooney family invite me to their house?" And he starts questioning everything. Because even though he has all this fame and all this power and all this fortune, there's some insecurities there. When he's causing this big of a stink over this, which, hey, I would be annoyed too if the quarterback called me out publicly. However, the quarterback's won 2 Super Bowls. And with winning 2 Super Bowls, you get certain leverage in an organization. When I look back at this whole thing, I still find it's so hard to believe because of the talent. It's so surreal and crazy that Ben, Brown, and Bell, you had arguably the best running back in the game, one of the better quarterbacks in the game, and the best wide receiver in the game, and what do you have to show for it? Nothing. You guys couldn't win as a trio. Now Bell's in New York. Now AB, or Mr. Big Chess, is in Oakland. And now Big Ben's still there. So what's Big Ben going to look like this year? So I do believe Ben feels bad about how it did sour. I have to, though, rip Ben, though, for not being to realize in the moment, hey, maybe I shouldn't say this. Or you should have maybe apologized a little bit earlier. Now, bad job at Antonio Brown, because supposedly Ben tried to pick up the phone and call him and try to clear the air. And Antonio Brown basically said, "Lose the number, I don't want to talk to you." And didn't talk to him. When someone wants to apologize, you've had a lot of success together, you should at least take that phone call. I've had that problem in this industry as well. I'll keep the talk show host's name out of it. A certain talk show host, though, didn't like how I handled something, and I was not in the wrong for it. And I tried to call this talk show host, and the talk show host said, "Never contact me, never call me again." And I thought, wow. And I was called immature for that. And I was like, I'm trying to be the mature one, trying to clear the air, because I don't know why he was mad at me. It was stupid for the reason the person was mad at me. But hey, it is what it is. So when someone tries to call and apologize, you should pick up the phone. It's amazing, though. This is just dysfunction at its finest. It really is. And then Juju threw some shade at AB. This is from Mark Caboli. I think that's how you say his name. This was his tweet. "Juju Smith-Schuster took the high road with most of his comments today, but tossed, in Mark's opinion, a little dart at Antonio Brown by saying, I will take 5 catches for 30 yards and win the game. I'd rather win the game than have 10 catches and 2 touchdowns and lose. The Steelers, even though they may say they're moving on from what happened, they haven't moved on. And you will know a lot about the Steelers in the first 6 games of this season if this team has been able to move on. Because if they come out and play PO'd football, they're trying to move on and they're trying to show everyone we could do it without Bell and Brown. Except that this thing continues to linger and they continue to not be able to move on and it usurps this team's potential. It's still a good football team. Well, then you're going to have a lot more changes coming in Pittsburgh because then Mike Tomlin's going to be out of a job. Because they're not getting rid of Ben, but they will get rid of Tomlin next year if you don't make the playoffs again.
Now back to the Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We got 10 minutes to play, so let's end the show with a little game I like to call Onsides Offsides. Hit it!
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio.
Cleveland's favorite son, James Graceffo, has 5 questions for me. We'll hear from Cleveland's favorite son, James Graceffo, right now. Go ahead, James.
And just a little tease, there will be a Browns thought in here.
Ooh!
So just to keep everybody's appetite nice and wet. Warrior star Kevin Durant has been in the shadows as of late thanks to his mysterious calf injury. As we all know, Golden State hasn't lost a game without KD, and they are on their way to yet another NBA Finals. Durant squashed the talks of the media and others saying the Warriors are a better club without him this week by saying that it is not true from a basketball perspective. So onside, offside, Kevin Durant should be angry when it comes to talks that the Warriors are better without him.
Now, it's a stupid conversation, so I could get the frustration because they are a better team with Kevin Durant. They're just still a really damn good team without him. However, offsides, you should not be angry. You should not be frustrated. You're a 2-time finals MVP. You won back-to-back championships. You're one of, if not the best players in the league, and you're still very, 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 very sensitive. Yes, you should laugh and say, wow, that's a stupid conversation, but it shouldn't change your life and get you so annoyed that you're going after Chris Broussard and then Chris Broussard afterwards talking about how he has to pray for you and all this stuff. Like, enough! Don't be angry! Kevin freaking Durant! Be happy!
Couldn't you make the argument that based on all the reasons you laid out, he has every right to be angry?
Just ignore it! Because the sport...
But he can't.
We all know he's winning the championship, so pundits have to talk about something. And that's what they're going to talk about. Anyone with a brain knows that team's unbeatable with him. They've at least lost once without him.
Offside.
Moving on, staying with the Warriors, Klay Thompson had an interesting week. Golden State's all-world shooting guard seemed a bit upset when talking to the media when it came to his snub from any aspect of the All-NBA team. This, of course, hurts Klay in the wallet as he is
$80 million almost.
Yes, as he's now not eligible for a Supermax contract. But Klay is obviously more concerned with winning another title. So onside, offside, are you surprised that Klay Thompson handled this so well?
I once saw Klay Thompson post-game do an interview while eating a slice of pepperoni pizza. And it was so impressive. He would eat the pizza, the question would be asked, swallow the piece of pizza, answer the question. Another question would be asked, perfectly time the bite. So the guy knows how to handle the media. Except in this case, you find out of nowhere, oh, you didn't make the team that you needed to make 2 out of 3 years, and you would have got some big fat bonus on the Supermax.
Straight cash, homie.
Yeah, I would be very annoyed. And you could tell Klay was annoyed. However, he handled it perfectly. Because he went back to the, all right, it's fine. You know what? I'm going to have a little humble brag here as he should. And I wish he would just be more open about it. You know what? I'm Klay Thompson. It takes more than 1 All-Pro or 2 All-Pros to be as successful as we are. So everyone can have the contracts. Everyone can have They're all pro teams. I'm going to go get another ring on my finger. And then I'm going to re-sign and win more with the Warriors. So I thought Klay Thompson handled it fine. I was actually impressed because if that was me, I'd be throwing sharp objects. I'd be freaking out. I'd be cursing out people saying...
Oh, you'd be stabbing people in the back.
I don't know if I go that far.
I would.
Not literally,
you have no idea.
I'd be saying to the reporter, bleep you, why'd you have to tell me that bad news? And make the reporter feel all crummy.
All right. Heading over to the NFL, Browns GM John Dorsey addressed the media this week.
Oh, your favorite team?
Yeah.
I have a Browns jersey, by the way.
Can I have it?
A friend of mine was part of the Tide commercials, and I have the Tide Pods.
Oh, okay.
And I have a number
one. The
thing
that Gronkowski served up to everybody, and that you should go eat.
I have a number one, and if you're a child listening, we do not condone eating Tide Pods. I have a number one Browns jersey with the last name Tide on the back. I'm going to get you to wear that by the end of the year.
Yeah, that's fine. You can bring it in. I'll wear it.
Okay.
Heading over to the NFL, Browns GM John Dorsey addressed the media this week for the first time at a party for Cleveland being awarded the future NFL draft.
That's like a scene from Draft Day?
They were awarded a future NFL draft. He was there.
And they had the party in Draft Day after the picks.
By the way, bad movie.
And I like Draft Day.
Oh,
they started chanting,
so terrible.
Super Bowl! Super Bowl!
And John Dorsey cautioned fans and the media to not believe the hype after adding Odell Beckham and Kareem Hunt to an already talented offense. Freddie Kitchens has also tried to relay the same message, reminding everyone that the Browns haven't done anything yet. So I'll make this one really simple for you, buddy boy. Onside, offside, the Browns are overhyped.
What would you say the general feel is on the Browns this year?
That they're a playoff team.
I don't think that's overhyped, then. Now, people that go crazy and say Super Bowl, let's not go there yet, but I think playoffs, or I'll just say winning the division, I think it's a fair assessment. So you go eat your pancakes, and we'll get David Putney back as well. I think the expectations are fair for the Browns, but they are right in Kitchens and John Dorsey. They have to show on the field. Now, Beckham and Landry and Mayfield, they'll do a little extra talking and we'll add fuel to that fire.
Oh, you think?
If you're a Brown, I know. If you're a Browns fan, though, you eat that up because your team's been horrible for years. So now you have a season to actually look forward to for the first time in a long time where you could actually make the playoffs. Last year was like a nice little dip into the appetizers. This year, you're so close to getting into the dance. And we'll see what happens. We'll see if you'll sink or we'll see if you float.
Number four, an NFL team on the other side of the spectrum, the new-look Dolphins have kicked off OTAs this week under rookie head coach Brian Flores. The quarterback position in South Florida seems to be wide open with Josh Rosen in tow, but there might be an early favorite.
Which, that's idiotic if the quarterback position's wide open.
You know, really?
Yes. Josh Rosen needs to start.
Well, I'm saying... You spoiled the question. One unnamed Dolphins player told the Miami Herald that, quote, Ryan Fitzpatrick has been the best of the quarterbacks so far. So onside, offside. I already know what you're going to say.
Stop
Ryan
it.
Fitzpatrick will be the week one starter for the Dolphins.
I don't buy that a player said that.
It's in the Miami Herald. Unnamed player said Fitzpatrick's been the best quarterback in OTAs
fake news,
so far.
Fake news. OTAs are the most monotonous thing I've ever seen. I was just at one with the Eagles. They're boring. They suck. They're awful. They're terrible.
Tell the Dolphin unnamed player.
I wouldn't show up either. You throw like three balls if you're the quarterback. That's it.
Tell the Dolphin unnamed
Stop
player.
It.
He said it to the Miami Herald.
The Dolphin. Wait, what was the question?
Ryan Fitzpatrick will be the week one starter for the Dolphins.
If they are, the Dolphins should lose their franchise. The whole point of this year is to see what you know. What Josh Rosen could do. And if you think he's the franchise quarterback.
I'll ask you this. Is there anything wrong with having Fitzpatrick play the first 3 weeks and then slide Josh Rosen in there?
Stupid. You go Rosen for the full 16 games. I don't need to see Ryan Fitzpatrick with his beard play well for 4 weeks and then suck the rest of the season. You go to Rosen. You need to see if he could be the guy for 16 games. And if he can't, then you're drafting a quarterback next year. This year, and what's going to be a dreadful season for the Dolphins, is Rosen. If they start Ryan Fitzpatrick, unless if it's an injury to Rosen, they're a bunch of idiots.
Offside.
Which, knowing the AFC East, they'll probably do so.
Last one, our old friend Don McNabb was in the news this week. The former Eagles great told TMZ this week that he should be enshrined in Canton. McNabb also told TMZ that his numbers are better than Cowboys Hall of Famer Troy Aikman, which some Eagles fans surely liked. While McNabb may have a case that Aikman has something that McNabb doesn't, 3 Super Bowl rings and plus a Super Bowl MVP. So, onside, offside, Donovan McNabb is a Hall of Famer.
Notice everyone's interviewing Donovan McNabb after we've had him on our show, by the way. Donovan McNabb, very good. Very, very good. Not great. With all due respect to number five, only one season where he threw over 30 touchdown passes. If you have stats, and his stats, they're in the conversation. He's borderline. When you're borderline, though, you need a ring. He doesn't have a ring. And because of a lot of the shortcomings in the playoffs, that's what people remember him most for. Very good player, not a Hall of Fame quarterback. Donovan McNabb is not a Hall of Famer. You can play that sound effect one more time, Moriel.
Offside.
There we go. We squeezed it in. Good job out of Moriel. Good job out of Graceffa. I'd like to thank Eddie Olczyk. I'd like to thank Rick Barry and also Lane Johnson for joining us. The great Robin Lundberg is up next on many of the same CBS Sports Radio affiliates, the radio.com app, and SiriusXM Channel 206. See you tomorrow, everybody. I'm Zach Gelb. I'm out. Peace!
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.